411 Live.
Well, you can learn about issues that affect us every day. State of World, 411 Live.
Real people, real talk.
Made to help people in our community in every way. For your girl, 411 Live.
Hello, I'm Beverly Taylor, and this is the 411 Live. Real people, real talk. I have a treat for you. Three remarkable Black female former Milwaukee TV news anchors. I'm so excited to have them. So, you know, they're going to grace us and, you know, talk about their journey, their experiences, their insight. These women have been on our screen for decades, and they have shown their talent and their professionalism. So it is such an honor for me to have them as my guests, and I've been looking forward to this. So let me just introduce you to them. Vivian King, joining me, Joanne Williams, Toya Washington. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
It's so good to have you here to just chat about things. So I should mention that I am also a former anchor. I was in the Milwaukee market for 21 years, left in 2019. Vivian, how long were you, this sounds, how long were you in and when did you get out? It sounds like prison.
Sometimes it felt like that.
Yes.
I got here in 1995, and then I worked at TMJ4 till 2005. And so 10 and a half years, July of 2005. And so at first I was the education reporter, but then I got promoted to doing morning show. Well, actually, the morning show where I really was trying for the job, and then I didn't get the job. So I was like filling in for like 6 months, and then they hired somebody else. But anyway, I still stayed. And then I ended up doing a weekend morning show. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And then I also did the midday show as well towards the end.
I remember it was fun. Yeah. Joanne, we were at the same station.
That's right. We were at the same. We were both at Fox 6. Of course, I was there for TV 6, 6's News, for all the iterations of WITI.
Yeah.
But before that, I worked at WTMJ. And I started in 1971.
Okay.
So I've been in television until I retired in 2008 for more than 40 years.
Wow.
And when I retired, I did something else. And then I went to work for Milwaukee PBS and hosted Black Nouveau for about 8 years and some. And then I can't say I retired from that, but I left that and decided to make my own documentary film.
Right.
So I worked at that for 6.5 years and gave birth to that in 2022. And so now I'm on the festival circuit. My film is now on PBS, and I'm starting my second film.
Tell us the name of the film.
The name of the film on PBS is The Exchange, Kakana and King 50 Years Later.
Okay.
But the whole title is The Exchange in White America, Kakana and King 50 Years Later.
That's great. And people can look at our past podcast because you've been on here on the 411 Live talking about it when you were in the process of developing it and afterwards. So
yes.
It's done really well. So I want to go back to you, Vivian, since she gave us the full scope.
Right.
You wrote an award-winning book.
I did. And I was at Channel 4 for 10 and a half years, but I did work in television before that in Alexandria, Louisiana, Tyler, Texas, Battle Creek, Michigan, before I came to Milwaukee. And then left the business and started doing public relations with Roundy Supermarkets. And then I did community relations with Aurora Healthcare. And when Aurora Healthcare merged with Advocate, and it has merged some more since then.
Right.
I left and wrote a book because during that time, in the first 4 months of my time at Aurora, I collapsed and had a stroke. And I ended up writing that book because when I didn't have high blood pressure, history of stroke in my family, I was relatively active. And what doctors said was that birth control pills over the age of 40 is what caused the blood clot in my brain. It bled out over the part that manages your speech. And ironically, I could not talk for 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
And so my book is When the Words Suddenly Stopped Finding My Voice Again After a Massive Stroke. So when people meet me today, they're surprised that I had a stroke. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's
absolutely.
Like, thank you, God, for that.
Amen. Amen to that. And Toya, you're new to the ranks.
I am. I'm the most recent exiled. Yes, I am new to the ranks. And I, after hearing both of you and what your accomplishments have been and have monitored those, I'm like, what have I done since I've left? And then I have to remind myself it has only been a year and a couple months.
Yeah.
So I moved here in 2002, was on the air at the ABC affiliate here at WISN for 20 years. Prior to that, I was in Madison at the CBS affiliate there for 7 years. And yeah, it was really, as you all know, making that type of a market jump 20 years ago was very unusual. Didn't happen. And so it was a combination of being blessed with good timing, good luck, and good preparation. So,
So
20 years on the air here, and wrapped that up, hung up the IFB in December of 2022, and here's where we are.
Yeah, because I was watching, and I caught the newscast in the middle, and it was like a mention, and she's gone. It's just like, wow, that surprised me. I didn't see it coming.
I saw it coming. I saw it coming in the summer of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It was a contentious and unpleasant contract negotiation that led with some ultimatums that basically we met somewhere where I thought was somewhat adequate with the increase in pay. And then it was... basically, I was told I was at my ceiling, and that was that. If I wanted to come back full time, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But with two, you know, tween teenage girls, the demands in the evening are different.
Right.
And I did not want to miss anything. So I knew basically in 2020 that I was going to be fulfilling my last contract. And I would say most people in the newsroom, other than the closest of my co-workers/friends didn't know until about 3 months out.
Oh, wow.
But, and, you know, keep in mind, it was also, you know, Kent Wainscott, who had been on the air there for decades. He was retiring. And I'm like, I'm not taking his shine. Like, he's been here for, you know, and the way things came to a close, it really, I didn't think anyone needed any fanfare. That's not why I was not going to do that. So it was, that's exactly how I needed to exit and wanted to exit.
That's good. That's good.
On your own terms.
On your terms. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Took the words right out of my mouth. Okay, ladies, let's just kind of go back from the beginning. And I should mention, too, that Milwaukee is my third market. So when you were talking about going to Madison and you jumped, back then, that was a big deal. Now it seems like people come off the school bus and then they, you know.
Yes.
And they're here.
Right.
But, you know, back then, Milwaukee was like, your third market, because that was, you know, you were climbing. It was my third market. I started in a little market in Jackson, Tennessee, which is close to where I grew up. Then I went to Huntsville, Alabama. Then I came here. So in total, it was 21 at Fox 6, but in total, it's like 30 years in this business. But I want to find out from you guys, you know, what made you want to pursue TV news? Do you remember?
Absolutely. Because when I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, my dad was a high school principal at the time. And I was in advanced classes. And so everybody in my class wanted to be an engineer. And so I wanted to be a civil engineer and build bridges. And so, you know, I went to the University of Missouri when I was a sophomore in one summer program and spent 2 weeks there. And it, you know, it was great. So I'm like, yes, I'm going to be an engineer. I come back, and my senior year, there was a chance to go to the University of Missouri for a field trip. And so I went and I said, well, I've seen the engineering school. And there was this woman who happens to be a friend of mine now who was talking about journalism. And I said, oh, I like to write. So I went to the journalism school, and Mizzou has the oldest journalism school in the country. Mm-hmm. And I was just captivated. And so I said, that sounds like fun. I came back to St. Louis. The Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists had this urban journalism workshop. Now they're NABJ St. Louis. And I went through that 7 Saturdays, consecutive Saturdays. And I was just captivated by the broadcasters and Susan Kidd, Bonita Cornute in St. Louis. And I wanted to be a journalist. And that's in specifically in television. And that's how that happened.
Oh, wow. What about you, Joanne?
I fell into it accidentally. I was going to Northwestern University. I was in the School of Speech. I thought I was going to be a theater major. Mm-hmm. And so I started taking the courses that I was supposed to take. And I realized I'm not very good. And I'm not going to make much money in theater.
She said, I'm not very good. I'm not very good.
I looked around at all the other opportunities there were in the School of Speech. And of the other divisions, there was radio, television, and film. So I said, I'm going to try that. And I said, hey, this is fun. I can do this. And so that's how I got into it. I also didn't have to take math if I was in radio. So I did that, and then I never went to journalism school. I learned it on the job.
Oh, wow.
And I started, I'm a Milwaukee native, so mm-hmm. I started in this market.
Oh, wow.
At WTMJ. Uh-huh. But I started as a film editor and a writer.
Okay.
And then one day the news director said, have you ever thought about going on the air? And I said, no. And he said, well, we're going to try you.
Wow.
So he put me on the air with a reporter named Pete Wilson. Uh-huh. And I said, how do I do this? And he said, oh, just be yourself. So that's what I did. That's how I got started.
At that time, how many Black women were on the anchor desk?
Her.
None.
None.
Mm-hmm. Just me.
Wow.
That's why they said they're going to try it.
That's right. Exactly.
And we're glad they did.
They did.
Absolutely.
We're glad they did.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. How about you?
I knew what I wanted to do when I was a sophomore in high school.
Did you?
I thought for sure I was going to be a teacher. That's what I... Mm-hmm. I went to a small private school in Minneapolis, and they do what's called May program, which a lot of colleges do, like J-term, where you can go, like, do different classes or go travel abroad or whatever. Well, our high school did this, but it was during the last 3 weeks of the school year, and you had an opportunity to travel. My family did not have the money to send me to Rome or wherever else people were going. You could do alternate classes, like things that they didn't normally offer at the high school for those 3 or 4 weeks. And I was like, well, why would I sit in a classroom when I could be out doing something else? My freshman year, I was a teacher's aide. And by day 3, I was like, I can't do this. I love kids, but I was like, I can't do this. And then I was, you know, panicked. I mean, and think about it. You're 14, 15 years old. Like, why was I panicked? I don't know. But my dad the next year said, maybe you should try following Tony Saffold, who worked at WCCO, the CBS affiliate in Minneapolis. He's like, you love to talk. You love to write. You're always in somebody else's business. So you kind of reek of journalism.
Love you, Dad.
Yep. Yeah. So, and I was in love with it from day one.
Oh, wow.
And then I knew from that point on that that's what I wanted to do. And I had, you know, great aspirations to go to Syracuse, to go to Newhouse. Mm-hmm. And I got into Syracuse, but didn't get into Newhouse. And no one bothered to tell me then, like, most people don't get into Newhouse your freshman year. You have to apply. So I was like, I'm not going to go all the way to colder than Minneapolis in New York and Syracuse and freeze for a year and then roll the dice as to whether or not again. And so I'm like, okay, I'll do a year at Madison and then work things out after that point. And then I just ended up staying. So, and then got us, you know, got into the journalism school there and then got an internship at WYSC in Madison. Mm-hmm. And then one day the news director was just like, before you go to like Wausau and La Crosse and all these other smaller markets, what do you think about having a job here? And I was like, that's great. I appreciate it. But I've got, this is back when Kinko's, like I was spending hours at Kinko's between making copies of the resume. You know, I was like using the school lab, like, you know, doing your resume tape on VHS. Right. I was like, I got a box of resumes, a box of tapes, and I have maxed out my Casual Corner credit card. If that doesn't date us, I don't know what does. But I maxed out the credit card. I was like, I got cute new suits. I'm like, I got to go do this. And let me tell you, when I walked into some of those other stations, I was like, please take me. I was like, I can't move to a smaller city than Madison. I just can't. And so they did. And then now I'm back with the company, so that's kind of full circle.
That's great. Mm-hmm,
totally.
For your first job to be Madison.
Yeah. See, and again, unusual. Like that did not happen. Like you said, now it's like the school bus drops them off and they're in.
Right.
But yeah, and then to make a 50-plus market jump from there to Milwaukee.
That's huge.
Yeah, that is.
It was crazy.
My first market was Market 163.
Mine was 182. So, you know.
And then I jumped to 114.
So I feel bad that I started here.
Yeah. Don't feel bad. You blaze the trail for the rest of us.
Exactly.
Do not feel bad.
Exactly.
That's right.
Definitely blaze the trail.
That's right.
Hey, we're going to stop, take a quick break, and we're going to come back. You don't want to miss this discussion. I am talking to three remarkable former TV news anchors. So stay with us. You're listening to the 411 Live.
People couldn't see my potential, so I had to show them.
I've run this place for 20 years, but I still need to prove that I'm more than what you see on paper.
Today, I'm the CEO of my own company.
That's the way my mind works. I have a very mechanical brain.
Why are we not rethinking this?
I am more.
I'm more than
who I am on paper.
Welcome back to the 411 Live. I am talking with three remarkable ladies, as I always say, and that is Vivian King, Joanne Williams, Toya Washington, former TV news anchors in the Milwaukee market. And we were talking about how we got into the business, but I want to talk, you know, once you're in, what did you experience, especially as Black women, you know, challenges that you experience? What pops in your head right away when I say that?
The fact that I'm Black.
Yeah, yeah.
and you know, I was very petite. My voice is higher than, you know, a lot of people. And I just remember one time I filled in with the midday show before I started doing it. I filled in with Bill Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who may not know, African-American male anchor. And it was great because I was like, oh, I get to anchor with Bill. And afterwards, one of my friends who was a receptionist at the time said they got calls saying, why are there two Black people anchoring the news?
Wow.
And I was just like, really? So, you know, it was, you know, that's one that sticks out. You know, there have been others, you know, kind of similar vein, but.
And what year was that? Just out of curiosity.
That was probably, so I got here in 95. That was probably around 2000. Maybe.
Come on.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Hmm.
You don't seem surprised. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be.
I'm
asking questions. You don't seem to be surprised by that.
I knew that I was hired as a twofer because I was hired in 1971. Shortly after things had changed in society, you know, there was civil unrest, and there were people saying we don't have any Black people on the air. So, mm-hmm. And I was
Black and a woman.
I was Black and a woman.
Yeah.
So, I knew why I was hired. It was harder for me to deal with the men in the newsroom than it was being Black, because I had to. This was before men really accepted women in the newsroom. So I had to deal with all that. It was an interesting time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other question that pops in my head from what you're saying, how you dealt with, have you ever been with a co-anchor where you were like oil and water? Look at that face.
I know. I'm trying.
You know,
I was very lucky.
I had really cool co-anchors. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All my co-anchors were good. No, I didn't not get along with any of them.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Oh. That's good. What about things like appearance, makeup, clothing? how you pronounce something. You know.
I remember there was a consultant that came to the station once, mm-hmm. and she showed us a picture of an anchor from New York or something, and I don't even remember who it was, but she had very short hair, and she said, "Now, this is inappropriate to have such short hair."
Inappropriate.
I'm sorry. And it was very curly. And she said, "Now, you can't have this." And I remember asking, "Why?" She said, "Well, this just isn't what you should look like as a woman." And that's when I was quite younger. And I had very long hair at the time. I had hair way down to here.
Okay.
Which nobody can see on it. Well, you can see on the camera. Anyway, and the first time I cut my hair, I cut it as short as it is now. I cut it all off.
All at once. So you went to home on a Friday, came back Monday looking with much different hair.
That's right.
I bet they had a fit.
You know what? They looked at me, but they didn't say anything to me.
Yeah.
And I just smiled and went on the air.
Wow.
Good for you.
Because I remember, you know, in some of those markets, it's like if you're changing anything, need to let somebody know first.
Right.
Before you do that.
You know, in my smaller markets, it was like I was the best dressed thing there.
Really?
Right? I mean, so they're like, "Oh, okay." So, you know, I've never really had somebody say anything about, you know, my appearance. Probably I put more pressure on myself because I was initially trying to be like this person or that person you know, and so it took me a while for me to be myself. And when I just said, you know what, I just have to be me, that is when I think I got much better.
Right. When you were in the newsroom, you know, because I did reporting and I anchored. And I think of those morning meetings that we would have, those story meetings, trying to figure out what we're going to do for the day and all those kind of things. Did you find yourself, at least I did, truly advocating for minorities?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Always. Yeah. Absolutely.
Always. My parents wouldn't have it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, my dad was principal of the first black high school west of the Mississippi. My mother went to that school. You know, I grew up being proud to be black and making sure that I was seen and heard and that my voice was heard, you know, thanks to how my parents raised me.
Right, right. My thing, I can remember having these heated discussions about, like I said, I've been in the business for 30 years. I remember the heated discussions about the descriptions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, are looking for a suspect black male. And I'm just like,
That's half of Milwaukee. Half of Waukesha County.
Exactly. And then,
well, maybe not half of Waukesha County. I shouldn't qualify.
And then there was one station that was notorious for it would be a black male, but otherwise it would be we're looking for a suspect. And then it's like, okay, what's up with this suspect? Mm-hmm. And that suspect was white. But we wouldn't say we're looking for a white suspect. Uh-huh. So, like, this is not right. No. Black male is not a description.
No.
Yeah. No.
So I had those kind of discussions. And the other discussion that I would have is, okay, I know that crime goes up at the top of the show. And we have black males in their jail uniforms walking through. Where is the balance? Where is the, because black males are lawyers, doctors, realtors, all these things. We do stories that we need these experts. Why can't we have them as experts?
See, and it's funny that you say that because that was one of the intentional things. When I would find experts, I always looked for the names that seemed to be someone who was not white.
Mm.
So that was where I would say, oh, I have this expert lined up and slip it in. That was, but yes, it was, you know, at times vocally advocating, but also times where it was just the silent stealthy advocating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, I had wonderful photographers because we had several African-American photographers in our newsroom. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the care that they took to, you know, film and videotape our community was just unmatched. And so we were all advocates in the newsroom. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we'd have heated arguments as well, and discussions, I should say, but we really tried our best. And I just like to say that people, you know, when people come up to me saying, you know, people still come up to me saying they miss me on the air. Mm-hmm. When are you going to go back? I was like, well, it's been since 2005. I don't think I'm going back.
Yeah. I can remember a time when our news, was he the news director? Yes, he was. We were watching something on a monitor in the newsroom, and there was a fire at a supermarket. Mm-hmm. And the wrong address came up for the supermarket. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, wait, that's the wrong address. That's the wrong place. And he said, that doesn't matter to those people. And I said, it does matter to those people. That's their neighborhood store, and we got to fix it. He said, well, we'll fix it on the next newscast. But wow. I had to deal with some of that. And I never let it slip. If somebody said like something like that in the mm-hmm. newsroom, or if somebody said something like that in a meeting, I would always say something about it.
Yeah, who's the they and the those you're speaking of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My coworkers and my bosses.
Yeah. No, I'm saying that, well, that's how I would challenge. Like when someone would say that it doesn't matter to them, I'm like, who are the thems you talking about then?
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Explain to me who are the thems.
Yeah.
Right. And then usually it was like, they realized there Crickets. Was a retraction to be made.
Yeah.
But that happened more often than I would have wished it happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you have to speak up.
Absolutely.
I wonder if people speak up in the newsroom now.
I certainly hope so.
I hope so too.
I would say as the most recent mm-hmm. exiled. I would say there are advocates. For sure. And there are people who speak up and speak out. And there are people who are not, don't share the same colors that we are, that do so as well, is impressive to me.
That's
and
good.
A lot of the younger journalists who are more globally aware, I will just say, mm-hmm. are ones that there have been plenty of times, because I think for many reasons, just raised in a different era where mm-hmm. they recognize the importance of inclusion and diversity in a newsroom. Also because, quite frankly, I have a few former coworkers where they knew, I'm exhausted. Yeah. I'm exhausted that I have to be the one. Yeah. Derrick Rose, exhausted that he has to be the one. Mm. You know, like, I mean, Kristen Pierce, exhausted, like someone else. So I would say, yes. Is it every newsroom? Probably not. Mm. But I would say, There was definitely urgency in making sure that, hey, like we need to reexamine how that video is shot, or examine who we're getting as an expert, or examine why do we keep going to the same zip code for these stories.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I remember being a reporter and being out, and you know, sometimes the person who looks the most disheveled or unput together, I should say, they're jumping in front of the microphone, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it was a Black person, I would just be like, okay, let's pull out, you know, let's fix the hair over here. Or this is a little out of place. You know, I just wanted to help them, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to let them, you know, before they did that. Because I know that there are so many others would put somebody on there who just looked horrible, but nobody's listening to what they're saying. They're looking at what they look like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, that was one of the things that I had. And then you do the MOS, man on the street, and I would always tell my photographer, okay, let's look diversity. Mm-hmm. Let's have different voices here. You mm-hmm. know, it's just so important. And the newsrooms are not diverse. Those things, they're
overlooked.
They're overlooked.
And it's not consciously.
Right.
It's not
right.
intentional, I don't think. It's just Yeah. I mean, you're feeding the beasts. So let's, it's MOS. Like, mm-hmm. let's just find, oh, look, those are the first five people that were willing to stop and talk to me. Let's keep it moving.
I got 5 minutes to get a story together.
Yeah.
So that's right.
Just grab this person right here.
There is that. There is that. Ladies, that's 30 minutes. So that is the reason why you sit tight. We're going to do a part two. Because there are a lot of other things I want to talk to you about. You know, like the mental health, the emotional things that you go through with some of these tragic stories that we would cover. Just a lot of other topics. So thank you for being here. Vivian King, Joanne Williams, Toya Washington, sticking with me and going into part two. And thank you for joining us for another episode. We are a nonprofit organization, so if you'd like to help, go to our website, the411live.org. Until next time, I'm Beverly Taylor. This is the 411 Live, real people, real talk. If you would like to check out past episodes, there are many ways. Go to your favorite podcast platform, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, like and watch us on Facebook, watch and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if you have suggestions for future episodes, go to our website, the411live.org. Thank you.